This episode of Warp 5 is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints, featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
Hi, I'm Anthony Montgomery, Ensign Travis Mayweather on Star Trek Enterprise, and you're listening to Trek FM.
How we doing, Trip?
Ready when you are.
Prepare for warp.
Course laid in, sir. Request permission to get underway.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Warp 5, our dedicated Enterprise show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today, as she is every week, from Australia, is Kate Walsh. And Kate, you know, you and I are sitting here right now. We're recording a podcast about Enterprise, while our American colleagues on the network are getting ready to consume copious amounts of bird.
And who can blame them? Thanksgiving. We don't celebrate Thanksgiving here in Australia. So I tend to keep abreast of these things via Twitter.
Right, yes. And we don't celebrate that here in Japan either. And we don't celebrate it here in my house either, although I am American. I have been here so long that I kind of lose track of these holidays. We, as I told someone yesterday, we don't celebrate Thanksgiving, but we do watch Snoopy make popcorn and buttered toast for everyone every year.
So do Americans actually eat turkey for Christmas and Thanksgiving?
Yes, but for Thanksgiving, turkey, that's the traditional dish. For Christmas, some people make turkey, but ham is also quite popular. It's not necessarily just turkey on Christmas, so...
We should bring in a new tradition of catfish for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I think that's if they were having Thanksgiving aboard the NX-01, I'm pretty sure that Trip would ask Chef to airlock the turkey and just make it catfish.
Catfish with some pecan pie for dessert and some nice Georgia peaches.
You know, I think Chef would really be into this discussion, but I think that what we should probably talk about today in terms of Enterprise is something that's not quite as pleasant as food, something that's a little bit scarier, which, of course, for a lot of our listeners, that might mean tofu, but we're going to talk about the spooky, scary stories in Enterprise. When we were talking about possible topics for today, you suggested horror on Enterprise, which, given Brannon's fondness for the genre, seemed like a fun trip to take. Enterprise has had its share of spine-tingling episodes, whether they be just spooky stories or outright horror. And Star Trek itself, of course, has a tradition of taking themes from horror and working them in and putting a space-age twist on them. So, again, this is a topic that you wanted to talk about, so why don't you lead us in here to horror on Enterprise?
Well, as you said, Chris, the fact that Brannon Braga, who was the executive producer and head writer on the series, is known for having a fondness for horror, gave us a good lead-in to look at how this theme emerged in Enterprise, but... And I'm not sure how much everyone is really aware of, you know, the strong history that Star Trek has in looking at horror themes. And certainly, I would say more so than any series, TOS really delved into that theme. There were a lot of episodes that were portrayed as classic horror stories and horror themes, whether it be vampires or, possession or... murder mysteries, Halloween stuff. There was all sorts of things that TOS delved into, and they presented it in a way that was very much like the horror movies of the time and that came shortly right. afterwards presented it. So they really did. It wasn't just the stories; it was the style in which they were done.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't instantly think, you know, sci-fi and horror go well together, but you know, even Voyager played it up in terms of Bride of Chaotica in a funny way.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because here in Japan, if you go in a video store, the sci-fi and horror sections are together.
Mm.
There isn't this distinction so much between the two. And I think that these days when you say horror, people tend to think more of slasher movies.
Yes.
I believe more of kind of the blood and the gore and the psychotic killers and this kind of thing, which is really not the tradition of horror as a genre. If you go back into the 19th century, especially, horror is really more of just stories that can frighten you or startle you and sort of induce these sorts of feelings of fright that we typically try to avoid. And uncertainty, right? You know, things that we try to avoid because, of course, as we evolved and before, you know, we had modern civilization, we were much more frightened by these things because it really was a matter of survival for us. And when you talk about the original series, of course, they had great writers. And I don't mean great writers writing those episodes to say that we didn't have great writers on the other series. But what I mean is you had people like Richard Matheson writing The Enemy Within. And, you know, he primarily wrote in the horror genre. And also, in terms of time, in the 60s, they were closer to more of a pure form of horror, in terms of literary horror, than we are today, where we have more of the Hollywood, the cinematic, slasher type feel to the stories. And I think that's why you got a lot of those themes in the original series, where, of course, you got the Jekyll and Hyde with Matheson's story, The Enemy Within. You got the spin on Dracula with the salt vampire and the man trap. And you got even things like the Stepford Wives with What Are Little Girls Made Of, where you've got all the androids being built.
And that's not it's not what we would normally think of as horror, What Are Little Girls Made Of. But it's quite unsettling and unnerving as a concept. And there's ethical things that come into it too, but almost in a creepy way. It's really interesting the way that episode is done.
It's not so startling to us today because we're accustomed to the idea of artificial life forms and we're accustomed to the idea of robots in our own lives and, of course, androids through science fiction. But back in the 60s, the idea of those things like we see in What Are Little Girls Made Of is a much more frightening concept than it is now.
Well, what I do find is when I go back and watch those episodes from the original series, like that one that we were just discussing, even though nowadays that concept wouldn't be so startling, watching it from the 60s and the way in which it's presented, it reinforces to me what it would have been like watching it in that time, just because of the style. So it's like you're watching it afresh.
Do you dress up in like 60s attire to watch it? Do you do your hair like in a 60s do so that you're really in the mood?
And I have my apron and sleep protectors as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I like it when I watch Cat's Paw. You know, I get all the candles out and I get my little Enterprise on a keychain so I can dangle it along with Sylvia.
Skeletons out of the closet.
Yeah.
Well, in the book, it was a book written, an unofficial book called Future Perfect, and it was about the influence of Star Trek across the world.
Yeah.
And there's a part in it when it talks about how Brandon as a child used to make his own movies with, you know, children from the neighborhood. And he would make up his own fake blood in the kitchen, but he was actually terrified of real blood. And so, you know, this was his hobby and he always kind of pursued that, and he went off to college and then made his own horror films there as well. And so one thing that strikes me about Star Trek in general is that, you know, people have, or writers would have, all sorts of completely different interests, but science fiction as a genre is broad enough and all-encompassing enough that you can really tackle so many different genres through Star Trek. We've seen all sorts of, you know, genre episodes through the holodeck, which are a little more tokenistic, but the thing that most strikes me about the horror theme is it's just so compatible with sci-fi in general. And I think,
yeah,
aside from the original series, but of all of the new series, in my opinion, Enterprise tackles that theme better than any of them.
I think the premise of Enterprise, or the time that it's set in the 22nd century, and the fact that our crew is going out into deep space for the very first time lends itself very well to that, because they aren't necessarily prepared for what they're going to find the way our 24th century crews are. They're very accustomed to encountering aliens and often very frightening ones. And also our crew on Enterprise, they don't have the same technology to help them that the 24th century crew does as well. So it is a very good setting for horror in the sense of things that are going to startle or frighten you. And not in, again, as we talked about at the beginning, the more slasher, you know, blood and gore type thing that people tend to think of. Well, we have a list of various episodes in Enterprise that do have elements of horror in them that we can talk about today. And of course, the first one is just right off the bat, kicking off the series, Fight or Flight, which I'm glad this episode came right at the beginning of the series, because as I was just saying, the fact that they're going out there for the very first time and they don't know what they're going to find, having the Axanar hanging upside down, that was really scary, and it was a very appropriate moment to delve into horror.
And the fact that they're hanging on meat hooks, for me, whilst it's not too overt or gory, that to me actually makes the horror interpretation a little more contemporary than what we might have seen in the original series. It reminds me of something that we might have seen in a movie like Saw, but it's not overt. It's done tastefully. The focus is on the crew and their reactions to what they see. You know, and in particular with this one with Hoshi, who was the perfect character to explore this particular theme in this episode.
That's key for me, the fact that the focus is on the crew's reaction and how they deal with the experience, because I'm not a fan of horror, really, and I'm certainly not a fan of the modern movies, you know, like, well, you mentioned Saw, those types of movies. I'm not a fan of those movies. I don't like blood. I don't like violent or psychotic killers or any of this stuff, but that's shocking, and so Hollywood tends to focus not so much on the reaction of the people, but more on the actual fright itself and the vivid images and such of the actual violence. So the way it's handled in Fight or Flight, for me, definitely, it helps the story connect with me and get the message and get the feel for what the crew is going through.
Yeah, and it's that point of view, perspective of, you know, we're here to live this journey through the characters. And, you know, sometimes Star Trek can have a tendency to really focus on, you know, the alien species as plot devices, you know, the alien of the week. And sometimes the crew can feel secondary to looking at that and the novelties of this new alien species. But in this one, because the aliens are basically dead, you know, we are given that opportunity to focus on the crew.
Most definitely. If we move on to another one that we've talked about a bit on the show recently, is Vox Sola. This one is really interesting because it's that unknown creature, the something that's kind of almost defies science.
Yeah.
And therefore is frightening because we can't really wrap our minds around what it is in the first place.
And it's not frightening because it's really, you know, it's not like something that's overtly attacking the crew.
Yeah.
It seems to be great. It's like it's not chasing them through corridors. So it's scary in a subtle way. Yes, it reaches out to them in the cargo bay, but you know, it's generally, it's growing, it's doing its thing, it's absorbing Archer and Trip. But it doesn't, on some level, it doesn't come across as hostile. When I look at this alien and I think it's possibly the way that some of the crew interpret it, certainly Hoshi, it's just another biological organism that's doing its thing, living its life, and they need to find out a way to communicate it. And the challenge of doing that in time to save the crew is where the tension comes from. That's really good storytelling, really good way to tackle, you know, a horror story. It's in that subtlety, it's in that natural tension.
Another interesting thing about that alien in Vaxhalla is that something else that horror does in the great tradition of literary horror is to look at something in the society or in the environment that frightens us, something that we're fearful of because we can't control. And like you said, this creature is not chasing them down the corridors. It does affect them if they come into proximity of it in the cargo bay, and then it pulls them in, and then it starts absorbing them, and it takes a long time, right? It's a long process to be absorbed by this creature. If you think of something, you know, an environmental risk, even if I think of something today, I can think of something like global warming, or I actually don't like the term global warming because it isn't really very accurate, but climate change. So climate change is something that we can ignore it, just like the crew could ignore this creature that's in the cargo bay if they wanted to. Just kind of, we'll just leave it alone. We'll let it do its thing back there. Maybe it won't eventually come out in the ship and get us. Or we can go and we can tackle it head on, but there are risks in that as well. And because of the nebulous nature of this creature, I also think the story fits well into the horror genre in that respect, that it is something about our lives that is somewhat beyond our control and therefore is frightening.
It's interesting. I really like your take on that. The one thing it also made me think of is how sometimes Star Trek stories have been written based on the personal fears of the writers. And an example of that, and you may be able to help me here, it's a TNG episode where Lieutenant Barclay is dealing with his
realm of fear.
Now that episode
with the transporter psychosis.
And it was based on Brannon's own fear of flying, and it also reminds me of the episode Vanishing Point, once again dealing with transporter
anxiety. Those two episodes have a lot of similarities.
So it whilst they aren't overtly horror episodes, they are derived from an interpretation of a personal fear.
Let me ask you a question about those, though. So in Realm of Fear, unfortunately, we did not get to meet Barclay's dad. Of course, we famously did meet Hoshi's dad in Vanishing Point. Is the horror element for you the idea that you might slowly vanish, or is the horror element Hoshi's dad, the conversation with Hoshi's dad? And how horrible that was.
The horror element comes from imagining myself in Hoshi's place and then realizing that that would mean by default that he was my dad.
And half of my genes come from him. So, personal fears, definitely that comes into play there. In The Crossing is another one, and The Crossing is interesting because we get into the realm of non-corporeal beings. It's actually the first time on the timeline that any crew in Star Trek encounters non-corporeal beings. But of course, because it's Enterprise and the series was made last, it feels like something that we as the viewer have experienced happening to the crew over and over again. But beyond that, for me, it's almost like it's like being swallowed by the whale. That ship, the Wisp ship, the aliens in that episode are, we'll call them the Wisp. And that ship almost looks like a whale, right? And it comes up behind the Enterprise, and the bay doors open. It's like the mouth of the great whale opening, swallows the ship. And Archer even makes the comment to T'Pol that we're in the belly of the beast.
I've never thought about it like that. I must admit, with this episode, I wouldn't have upfront thought of it as a horror themed episode, but it was actually someone on Twitter that suggested it to me months ago when I was just thinking about this idea of horror. And the more I thought about it, and particularly leading up to today, the way I interpret this episode is as, a possession, an exorcist
kind right. of. Yeah, there's a lot of that things. In there.
Yeah. But certainly, yeah, that imagery of being swallowed up by this ship is quite, once again, to me, I use that word a lot, but it's unsettling.
Well, I think the two go together. Mm. So the possession and the being swallowed by the ship, being swallowed by the great beast, they both tie into a loss of control.
Mm-hmm.
They both play into confinement and a loss of control over yourself or your situation. So when the ship is inside the Wisp ship, and I love the scenes when they're looking out the window because of the blue, and it's almost like what you could imagine it might be like if you were inside the belly of a whale or a beast or something. It's you might look outside, and of course this is, you know, maybe not in reality you being swallowed by a whale, but just imagining, think back to Star Wars, for example, when the Millennium Falcon goes inside the creature in the asteroid and they're inside that body. It's kind of like that. And but there's it's confinement. You can't get out. You're trapped. And likewise, now an interesting take on this in The Crossing is that sometimes when we have non-corporeal beings take over the body of a crew member in Star Trek, they share the body with the crew member. But this was like an exchange. This was that they took over the body, and then for lack of a better word, the soul of the crew member goes out into the ether. And that actually they were exchanging places.
This is one of the things that makes me most uneasy watching this episode, is I find myself thinking, what has happened to our crew member? You know, what are they experiencing? Is there an anxiety? These creatures try to say that they're having the time of their life, but, you know, we don't know that. There's vested interests here. And so, yeah, that's where it actually strikes at me is putting myself in that position and thinking, we've got no idea what these people are going through. I mean, never mind how disturbing it is when Reed starts hitting on T'Pol. Is it T'Pol? Yeah. He hits on T'Pol, and is it T'Pol that he says, or it was someone else in the lift, I think it was someone else, I'm a man and you're a woman.
Yeah, yeah. You're a female, I'm a male. Yeah. There seem to be anatomical differences.
Yeah, yeah. That's really
and
disturbing.
She's like, sir, gets off the turbo lift. But when he goes into T'Pol's quarters, yeah, that's where he's like, well, you know, if we're going to mate, you're going to need to disrobe.
Yeah.
Like, do you think it's appropriate that you're here at this hour? But, you know, it's frightening in the sense of it's Reed's body to everyone else who just looking on, that's Reed, but it's not Reed. So it's this fear of losing yourself, losing control, losing your identity, beyond just being possessed. It's just this idea. I mean, just think about the fact if you lost control of who you were.
Yeah.
That's very, very scary.
Almost like being in a coma, some level of conscious, well, whether with consciousness or not, but certainly the body is still there, but the mind isn't. Mm-hmm. Isn't it interesting though in this episode that when Reed is being inhabited, the first thing he does is go and hits on all the women. When Trip is being inhabited, the first thing he does is go and eats everything in sight.
Right. I love that scene where he's holding up a piece of bread. He goes, have you ever tried this? Archer's like, yeah, it's called bread. Have you ever eaten that before? It's like he finds the most ordinary, bland thing in the kitchen.
Yep.
Like, damn, this is good. You ever tried this? What happens when he finds the chili?
Oh, that would be interesting.
But it is interesting to see what everyone does when they're possessed, no doubt. And another interesting thing that it's actually maybe elevates the fright level in that episode a bit is that it's hard to tell at times who's possessed and who isn't. There are moments where you think Archer is possessed, but he's not. You're not quite sure. There are moments where you think Phlox is possessed. When Phlox goes to Hoshi's quarters, you almost think that he is possessed and he's taking the phaser to protect himself against Hoshi if the wisp had left her body because the body was injured.
It really does play into that other fear of, you know, not knowing who you can trust as a viewer.
Right. Yeah.
As well as for the crew.
Yeah, even as a viewer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so much in that episode that, you know, didn't strike me the first times I watched it. But yeah, the more I think about it, there's a lot of stuff.
Well, it's not horror in the sense that if you say horror to someone and the first thing they think of as being horror, I would say The Crossing doesn't fall into that category. Mm. But when you think of it as things that are frightening, things that are startling, things that induce, feelings of horror, then it qualifies for that. Now, regeneration came along with the Borg, and the Borg themselves are very scary. One thing I like about Enterprise and regeneration is that they treated the Borg more like the original Borg, not like the Voyager Borg, who you could sit down and talk to and negotiate with and work together and, you know, like run relays with and pass the baton. And these are more like the horror film zombies coming at you, mindless. They don't care. They're going to walk right over you, just like they were in The Best of Both Worlds.
The mission is very mechanical.
Right.
Single focus. Well, what was mentioned in episode 2 of Warp 5 when we spoke with Brannon was that this episode was actually intended as an homage to The Thing, which is interesting as well. I know when...
The beginning especially.
Yeah, when I was going to say that. When we look at those Arctic scenes and... the opener's great visually. It's quite stunning. And then we go into, you know, when they're actually in the lab and doing the tests and it starts to come alive and a little bit Frankenstein-y as well. There's a similar, I think it's an episode of The X-Files, which is a little like that as well. And then I also think of Aliens versus Predator, the first one, which is also set, you know, in Antarctica. And, you know, there's this sense of something hiding in the ice, in a place of complete isolation. You know, and if you're going to get into trouble, it's going to be real trouble.
Makes you worry about opening your freezer, right?
Yeah.
What's going to be under the ice cubes?
I'll have my scotch without ice today, thanks.
Right. You know, on the Enterprise Season 2 Blu-rays, for regeneration, there's the great commentary with John Billingsley and with his wife, Bonita Friedrici. And Bonita's so funny at that opening where she says, "This is where you run far away." And then she says, "And this is where you run far away the other direction. Just get out of there. Just run." Just exactly what you're thinking, right?
Yeah. And in those early scenes and we've got it coming alive and one guy says, "Oh, you know, maybe we should just kind of put it back on ice again." It'll be fine. And he's like, "Oh, you know, it doesn't exactly look friendly."
You know, we have a poll on the website on Trek FM that it's about this episode. And the question is, if you found a Borg frozen in the ice, what would be the first thing that would tip you off that it is dangerous? And because so many Star Trek fans haven't watched Enterprise and they don't know this episode, they often will reply, because it's a Borg, duh. Mm. And I want to say, no, no, it's about the episode Regeneration. These people don't know what a Borg is. They just find this thing. And you as the viewer, of course, know what it is. And you're looking at it and you're thinking, let's see, it's got like a cutter on its arm. It's got like a gun attachment on its arm. I think these things would tip me off that it might be dangerous. But not these researchers. Nope.
But they do have a little bit of that discussion, you know, the one with a little bit of sanity. You know, he's kind of got a gun instead of an arm, and it was a healthy arm. Now, what kind of people do that?
Right.
Oh, you know, infinite diversity.
Yeah.
Each
infinite weapons and infinite combinations.
Yeah. It's not a sign of a friendly species.
Right. So while we're on the topic of zombies, we can go into Impulse. Mm. And this is just flat out zombie movie right here.
Yeah.
With Vulcans. So you've got strong zombies on top of that. So if zombies don't scare you, strong zombies really should.
Yeah, Vulcan zombies. That's some scary stuff. I love this episode, and I actually haven't watched it enough. I think just where it sits in the flow of episodes, you know, I haven't watched probably season three as much as some of the other stuff. And I tend to watch it in bits and pieces, but Impulse is great because you've got the zombies on the Vulcan ship, but then you've also got what's happening with T'Pol. So we can relate through her, and we've got that fear for her as one of our members of our crew. But then you've got this really imminent threat to the Enterprise in general as well. So it is very obviously a zombie episode, but I find it to be a lot of fun. It probably pushes that horror envelope a little bit more than some of the other stuff.
I think so. You know, there's the scene with lots of zombie Vulcans trying to get through the door. They're coming down, and it's just classic Attack of the Zombies. It's almost like the it's like the trailer that they've been running on Japanese television anyway for World War Z, the new movie version of that. And where you see like all the zombies just pouring off the side of this building, I think it is, where there's just so many of them coming at you. It really feels like that. And in terms of T'Pol, it does ramp up the fear a bit because, I mean, what scares you most about zombies? Is it the idea that a zombie is going to come and eat your brains? Or is it the idea that you could be who you are and then somehow you yourself could become mindless, undead in this way? And again, going back to what we were talking about earlier of losing yourself, that could happen as well. And so that's frightening. And so T'Pol is going through that. You know, T'Pol is saying, this is going to happen to me. It's already happening.
Yeah, it's inevitable.
And right. And so she becomes a point of view character as well in the, what if this were to happen? What would I feel like if I were losing myself?
And that very point makes me think of something like Aliens 3, where Ripley's got the alien in her chest and she knows it's going to burst through and it's going to breed, you know, and it's inevitable. This thing's going to happen to her, and we follow her journey and how she deals with that emotionally and coming to terms with it. That's what that reminds me of. But the other thing that scares me about the zombie aspect of this episode is it's not just losing control of yourself. It's the fact that zombies, even zombie Vulcans, cannot be reasoned with, you know,
right.
And particularly because they're Vulcans.
Some would say that normal Vulcans can't be reasoned with, Kate.
It depends on your idea of reason, I guess. But I think that element of it's a little bit like what we see in the Borg in Regeneration. There are these mindless automatons, you know, and you can't convince them to follow their conscience because they just don't have one. They're undead with the zombies. And Vulcans in particular are so, logic is the center of their world. And yet you've got these Vulcans that have, just been, their whole identity is stripped away by the fact that they've become zombies. They're completely stripped of their logic. So it's right. Even more intense in facing, it's not like you've got a Vulcan standing in front of you and you can talk about Surak's teachings and convince them to let go of their emotions.
Right. Because like humans, Vulcans have a very violent tendency. You might even say they have an even more violent past than humans. And it is the logic, it is Surak's teachings that allow them to keep that in check. And so when that's gone and they're mindless and they're really strong, and then the violent tendency comes out as well, you're in big trouble.
So they really are the perfect species with which to explore that zombie theme for that reason.
They are. Like zombie Ferengi, that wouldn't be very frightening, I don't think.
Ooh, marks.
they want your lobes. Must have lobes. Yes.
Yeah.
That reminds me, there's a rule of acquisition that says never trust a man who doesn't make time for umaks. Seriously.
Maybe that's the scary version of the zombie. The zombie Ferengi, they just have given up completely on umaks. You just can't trust them anymore. Mindless automaton Ferengis. No regard for the pleasures of Ferengi life. Or maybe it's that they have actually just completely given up on latinum.
That would drive them mad for sure. Well, let's go on to Doctor's Orders. Now, this one is horror in the sense of suspense. Again, Phlox even has the line in this episode, is this a starship or a haunted house? Right after he meets who he thinks is T'Pol for the first time, which is, of course, actually all in his head. But it's really the classic, the fear of being alone, right? It's so much like One on Voyager.
That's the one where she's having to look after the ship alone because they're going through that dangerous region of space and they're all in.
Yeah, that's right. And that's exactly what's going on here too. The NX-01 has to go through a dangerous region of space, and Phlox has to manage the ship. So it's very, very much like Voyager episode, but it is that fear of being alone. What goes on inside your head? Phlox is hearing noises. He mentions it's too bad. I shouldn't have watched The Exorcist last week. He actually has that line in the episode. And then he starts imagining T'Pol.
I'm actually a massive horror thriller fan as well as sci-fi. And one of my favorite movies and books is The Shining by Stephen King. And that book also very much deals with that theme of being alone and cabin fever and what happens with the mind when you're left to your own devices and slowly going insane. And there's a phrase, you mentioned haunted house, there's a general phrase, the mind is like a haunted house, you shouldn't go in there alone. And that's what I think of with this episode.
So this is Stephen King in space.
It is. They, you know, in that particular book and movie, the hotel is called the Overlook Hotel, and doesn't Reed often say this isn't a pleasure cruise when he's talking about it's the Overlook pleasure cruise.
So this one is it's a fun episode because that's what's interesting too. Horror doesn't always have to be purely frightening because. This is a fine episode as well as a psychologically suspenseful episode.
Yeah.
Largely because Phlox is the character who they chose to keep awake. I love the fact that we get these tidbits like Phlox walking around the ship naked because he thinks everyone is in a coma, induced coma. And the way that they, he walks in and you can't really see his midsection. He feeds the animals, turns the side. He's got the little pad strategically placed as he looks over. It's there's wonderful humor in this episode as well.
We learn a little bit about what he likes to do in his spare time. Actually, you mentioned The Exorcist and how he'd watch The Exorcist. In Cogenitor, when Tripp is taking the Cogenitor to go and watch some movies and they're looking through things that they've shown in former movie nights, one of the things that they had shown was The Bride of Chaotica. And, of course, You know, that's a little toast to what happens in Voyager. But they also show a lot of horror films, you know, Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein. And so it's kind of reinforced through their movie nights as well.
And that's the kind of horror that I like is the older stuff like Frankenstein. Mm. So that's Doctor's Orders. And then the one other one, and of course we saved this for last because, you know, we wanted to save the best for last.
Yeah, this is scary for so many reasons.
That's, of course, Extinction, which I tweeted yesterday is 90 seconds of great message and 41 minutes of what the hell is this?
I haven't watched this episode in so long, but I also watched it last night, and I now know why I blocked it out of my mind. There are so many disturbing aspects of this, but to be serious to start with, there is that sense again, almost like the zombie theme of being taken over by something, you know, whether it's a virus like we see in so many, you know, not necessarily zombie movies, but a virus or, by zombiness spreading or just losing control of one's own faculties, you know, and we can see that explored in a medical capacity sometimes as well. Of just things changing about you or events happening in your life that you have absolutely no control over. And that's how I look at this. But also actually with this episode, when it's revealed that the entire species has actually been long dead, there's that devastation when Archer, Reed and Hoshi realize that they are alone. So that isolation, that being the last of your species as well.
Yeah.
And in the very ending, when we realize that it's actually a virus that has caused them to change in this way, and that was the way that this species tried to ensure that they lived on, I then reflected back on that and thought, imagine that the fear that these people would have felt as it was all coming to an end and they knew it was inevitable. Like a meteor coming for your planet, almost.
Right. Well, right. They know it's coming to an end. Mm. So what do? They create this virus. That's the part of the episode I like. It's the last 90 seconds of the episode in sickbay with Phlox and Archer where, you know, Phlox says, we need to destroy the virus. And Archer says, no, it's, you know, they, as you said, they created this in an attempt to save their civilization. We came out here to save Earth, and I'm not going to destroy another civilization in the process. Mm. So he told the doctor to put it on ice. And that part of that was a great message. And I feel like, and also this episode, it's very promising at the start. Like the visuals are very interesting at
the
start.
You're talking about the Vulcan neuropressure?
No, the very start, the suit, like the decontamination suits that that these aliens are wearing, the lights on the helmets, the flamethrowers. It reminds me a lot of a comic. There's a Dr. McCoy Frontier Doctor comic where these people on this planet, they are using, I believe it actually is flamethrowers, if I remember correctly, to destroy a vegetation, which they think is harming them. And that comic, actually, it's a lot like Vox Sola as well, because it turns out that the vegetation is a planet-wide organism, just like that creature in Voxzola is actually part of a planet-wide organism. But visually, when Extinction starts, I'm thinking, oh, well, this looks like it could be a really good episode. And there's that great little exchange at the very end of it. But everything in the middle is like, what the... It's like, it's an interesting concept. And the concept itself fits well into the horror genre for the things that you just said. You know, it is very interesting. What if things were coming to an end and you couldn't do anything about it and you have to find a way to save yourself? The execution of it, though, is just so, so bad all the way through.
Well, that opening scene with the flamethrower, when I watched it again last night, and it was really disturbing to me. It was like, oh my God, that's so, the idea of just burning this person alive, like it was so effective. I do just feel like what I wondered after I'd watched it is, how could they have done this differently? Because that end message was good, but they needed the background stuff to get there. It just felt so dragged out. You know, maybe if we could have had more things going on the ship as they started to learn that it actually was, you know, a virus that had, and why it had been created. I don't know. I just don't know how they could have done it differently, but there was so little going on for the majority of the episode.
A lot of the problem with the episode are the lines of dialogue and how they're delivered. I mean, even Scott Bakula, who is a fantastic actor, I think comes off poorly in this episode because of the lines. And Hoshi comes off terribly in this episode. I think that if this were a Next Generation episode, the primary focus would be on Data and Geordi trying to unravel the mystery.
Yes.
Instead of it being on the characters that are affected by it. And I think that taking that approach would make the scientific element, because actually ultimately there's a scientific horror element to this. It would make it stronger in that case.
And also the focus ethical dilemma that they're facing would carry through stronger at the end as well.
Right, because you would have a staff meeting and Picard would debate over whether he should, destroy the virus or whatever. I think that's how you would have to approach an episode like this, because the idea behind it is interesting. It's a great science fiction concept. It's just pulled off very poorly. In a way, it reminds me a little bit, and it's not an exact parallel here, but it reminds me a bit of The Andromeda Strain, which is, of course, a fantastic classic SF story about a virus, that's transforming people and it actually can drive people insane, which is not exactly what happens to the crew here, but in a sense it is, because they do lose their identities. They do lose who they are. There's a bit of that in there.
I have a question for you. Do you know which episode of Star Trek Voyager was based on the story The Fly?
Oh, well, that's Threshold.
Yeah. Yes, and that's exactly what I found myself thinking of watching this episode.
Oh, yeah.
A nasty attempt at de-evolution, for want of a better word.
Yeah. Oh, talk about de-evolution. The Next Generation, Genesis.
Oh, yeah. They've all got one of them, haven't they?
Yeah, which I believe was one of Brandon's stories, wasn't it?
I believe so, yes.
And it's like Riker turning into a Neanderthal, I get. Barclay turning into a spider. Somewhere along the line, did Barclay have an arachnid grandparent or something? I don't quite know how that works.
Yeah.
So
that was just odd.
It was odd. It was definitely odd. All right. Well, we have run through 7 different episodes from Enterprise that fall under the horror genre. Do you have any final thoughts on the topic?
As I've said, I'm a massive horror fan anyway, so I tend to be drawn to elements that trigger some of those fear responses in me, not just in Enterprise, but in all of the Star Trek series. And I think, as we've said, the key in thinking about Star Trek from the perspective of horror is not to think about, slasher fix or, you know, really right. overt demonstrations of horror or blood or gore, because we don't really see much blood at all in Star Trek. It's very rare that you'll see anything like that. But, you know, the key to seeing horror in Star Trek is in looking at the responses that the stories are attempting to elicit in us. And that's not always going to be in displays as overt as fight or flight with people hanging on meat hooks. It may be certain anxieties that it triggers and allows us to connect with the story and the characters. I'm sure there are many more episodes than we've covered today that do that, perhaps not as strongly, but they certainly right, tap into those elements.
Right, but yeah. You can find elements of horror in other stories as well, and that fright, most definitely. Well, it's been a very interesting discussion, Kate, but horror isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week, so here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Talking Spock with Dave Rossi.
But now you add in the wild card for this one character that one of the most emotional races in the universe, human beings, is half of what he is.
Earl Grey.
TNG Introductions.
Well, because I think Data's Day was actually the one I was thinking of, so since that one's already taken, I might come in at this
No, I'll just erase
angle.
Everything that Daniel said. And,
Daniel, the first time we have a guest. Really? God.
Favoritism!
No. You one-upped her.
The Ready Room.
The Squire of Gothos.
Nobody has that much power. They must have some kind of transporter matter reshaper device. And it must be over there because he's hanging out by it. You know, it's a small room. What do you expect him to, like, I'm going to dance over here by the salt vampire. I don't
The Orb.
The Minion Invasion Tactics.
And Bashir says, look, I know what the orders say, but he attacked Chief O'Brien and we have rules against that sort of thing here. So I think that they're trying to figure out, yes, the Federation has rules, but how much are they willing to bend the rules depending on how we push their buttons?
To the journey!
Dealing with the end of Voyager.
I've recorded these on tape, and they were all kind of out of order, and so I had my own shuffle, where I would just
nice.
I would just put in a random tape, and I would get an episode from season 2, season 6, and then season 3, you know, and it was just really cool.
Oh, that's awesome. Just a grab bag.
Yeah, it really was. And so that was my way of coping, was just spending time with my friends. Warp 5.
Season 1, Highs and Lows.
He's talking about, it's more of a satiny one.
Okay.
Pretty plain with the piping over the shoulders in the three colors.
Yeah.
No, that's a
I ordered it, but they sent me to Paul's cat suit instead, and it doesn't
I
really
know.
Fit me,
it didn't really hug your curves in the right places, did it?
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Harlan Ellison's Soldier.
It's like Mr. Belvedere if Mr. Belvedere had really severe PTSD from a war in the future.
It's like Small Wonder, but with a Klingon instead of a little girl.
It's like Elf if Elf killed tons of people.
Literary Treks.
David Mack, A Ceremony of Losses.
And then we color-coded it, and we started lining up dates and events and saying, well, this book runs from this date to this date. These events in this book happen on these dates. So that if you're writing this scene in book 2, you know that it happens exactly, let's say, 11 days after this event in book 1. And that sort of meticulous, down to the fine detail, granular planning became absolutely essential.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and some days we even have two shows for you. And you'll find them all in a variety of places, including iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can stream or download from the website. So check out all the shows and find out what we've been talking about. Kate, let's tell everyone where to contact us if they'd like to share their thoughts on horror on Enterprise or anything else Enterprise. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose Warp 5, and that will come to both Kate and me by email. You can also send us a voicemail through the website, or you can go to our forums at trek.fm/forums to talk to us and other listeners about Enterprise and Warp 5. Also, in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and you'll find us on Twitter, where we're always tweeting away about Star Trek under username trekfm. Now, Kate, when you're not, hiding in the corner, covering your eyes, and trying to avoid being eaten by Vulcan zombies, where can people find you?
Well, on those rare occasions where I'm not doing any of those things or avoiding the freezer section of my refrigerator, you can find me on Twitter at Kate is Great OK. I'm active on Twitter most days, and usually I'm having conversations with a number of people about Enterprise or Star Trek in general. So send me a message or follow me and join in the chat.
Excellent. And you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. And you can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username and on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And elsewhere on the network, you can find me on a variety of shows. I do two shows with Matthew Rushing, The Orb, where we talk about Deep Space Nine, and Literary Treks, where we talk about Star Trek books and comics and interview authors. And also I do The Ready Room with hosts from all over the network, as well as special guests. And we talk about all five live-action Star Trek series and Star Trek news on that show. And then I also have my interview show Matter Stream, where I talk to actors and writers and scientists and all sorts of people about topics loosely associated with Star Trek. So check out all of those shows as well. And also, Kate, before we let everyone go, we'd like to ask you to please support our sponsor for this week's show. Your support of our sponsor makes it possible for us to bring Warp 5 to you every week. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way to read all of the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. They have 150,000 titles over there on Audible, and they have new titles coming every week. Lots and lots of classics, also current bestsellers. You know, these days most books that are published do come out in audio format, and they have them right there on audible.com for you to download in just an instant. In terms of Star Trek, they have lots of famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive Federation and Spock's World, lots of TNG books, lots of TOS books. And as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a trial to see just how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read, and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm. And we really thank Audible for their support of Warp 5 and the network.
We also wanted to invite you to check out Andrew Allen's album Smooth Federation. If you'll enjoy the jazz cover of Where My Heart Will Take Me here on Warp 5, you'll find that plus 9 other jazz renditions of music from across Star Trek. So if you're feeling a little bit anxious and edgy after watching your favourite horror episodes of Enterprise, pick up the album in iTunes or on Amazon, and I'm sure that'll smooth you out.
Oh, most definitely. You know, after I've run into aliens hanging on meat hooks, been chased down the corridor by Borg and Vulcan zombies, and partially absorbed by plastic wrap creatures, the only way I can unwind is with a little bit of Andrew's Smooth Federation.
That makes both of us, Chris.
And a glass of wine. And lastly, there's one more way you can directly help us keep Warp 5 coming to you each week, and that is by adopting some aliens. And don't worry, they're not scary aliens like the kind we talked about today. These are beautiful illustrations by Tobu Ishii. It's original artwork by the same artist who does most of the artwork that you see on our website. We have them available as badges and art prints, and you can mix and match, choose which ones you want in which format. We have different levels of contributions for you to choose from, and your donations make it possible for us to pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring Warp 5 and all of our other shows to you each week. And you'll find these aliens over at trek.fm/donate. And we really thank you for helping us keep the network going.
Once again, we'd like to thank everyone for listening. Join us again next week here in the Decon Chamber for another episode of Warp 5.